I'm Alberto Salvato. Welcome to Crime Time, a Virginia criminal law podcast. I'm here with Anna Dvorak, Anthony Norse, and Ann Thayer. Enjoy the show.
So here it is, legal disclaimer, because we are lawyers and we've got to write one. So if you are listening to this podcast, thank you. We sincerely hope you are listening to this podcast for its entertainment value and not with the intention of acquiring legal advice for any individual case or situation. I mean, come on, you wouldn't take advice from someone you have never met or spoken to directly, right? If you were bleeding profusely, you wouldn't listen to a podcast in hopes of a bandage somehow materializing over the internet and onto your 3D printer. Seeking actual legal advice can be just as important as a tourniquet. The hosts of this podcast are in no way intending to create an attorney-client relationship with any listener. Sorry, we are sure you all are great people, but we cannot stress enough how little we know of you and your case. And rather than risk an awkward moment, let us just remember we have never met. Nothing on this platform should be taken as legal advice for any individual case or situation. We are just a group of friends with differing opinions and viewpoints, which we will try to explore through discussions of current events, law changes, and whatever else floats our fancy.
Episode 4. Yes, Virginia, you can go to jail for speeding. Picture this. It's a beautiful day out. You're driving in your car. You're in the middle of, some say a midlife crisis. You're in your car. You put the top down. You're driving on 66. It's a wide open space because you just happen to pick the only time where there's no traffic. You're listening to groove, jet, and that music's just getting into you. And you're feeling that soul. And you step on the gas because you want that adrenaline pump. You drive out, next thing you know, the lights are on behind you. Look down at your speedometer, you're going 105 miles per hour. State trooper comes up, he's angry because he had to catch up to you and he had to drive 120 miles per hour, so his adrenaline is pumped up. Looks at you angry, and you're like, oh man, what am I going to do? Those facts are very similar to what happened to Jason Worth several years ago. He was driving fast, and I believe it was Fairfax County. He was going 105 miles per hour, got pulled over by a trooper. And with us today, we actually have Garrett Green, who happened to be there in the day of court when this case was tried. Garrett Green is an attorney in Virginia. He's been practicing since probably the first pandemic. I say that jokingly, but he is also the founding member of GrooveJet. GrooveJet provided us the music. He is paying us by the second, which is why we only have 2.5 seconds at the beginning and 2.5 seconds at the end of our podcast. Garrett, would you like to introduce yourself at this time?
Hi, everybody. I'm Garrett Green, Nicholson Green. I have been practicing law for over 30 years, but I don't like to go much beyond that in explaining how long I've been practicing in Virginia. And I'm delighted to be here today to talk to you about reckless driving in Virginia by statute with this very distinguished panel.
Excellent. Thank you, Garrett. And before we get into the reckless driving discussion about Jason Worth, I think it's appropriate for Tony to enlighten us about the Virginia laws and speeding and how dangerous it can be for not only your record, but for your livelihood and perhaps your ability to drive.
So in Virginia, there are several forms of reckless driving. Today, we're talking about reckless driving by speed, and that requires someone to be driving a motor vehicle on the highway in Virginia at 20 miles an hour or more over the maximum limit, or over 85 miles an hour over the regardless of the maximum speed limit. And if you are doing either one of those, you can be convicted of reckless driving in Virginia.
And what are some of the punishments that you can get with reckless driving conviction for speed, or any reckless driving for that matter?
So you can get up to 12 months in jail. Yes, Virginia, you can go to jail. You can get a fine of up to $2,500. And in fact, if you're holding your personal communications device now after January 1st of this year, it's a mandatory minimum fine of $250. And then you're also in danger of losing your license for up to 6 months. And whether or not you can have a restricted license to drive for certain things is going to be up to the judge that you're appearing before. You'll get points assigned by DMV. Something people get confused about is that the judge, the court, your attorney, none of us have anything to do with the points. That's going to be done by the Department of Motor Vehicles. And then your insurance can be impacted as well. So those are kind of some of the immediate penalties that you're going to face if you get convicted of a reckless driving.
Now, Ed, can that loss of license be anywhere on the planet, or is it where can you lose your license or your right to drive?
So if you have a Virginia license, you lose your privilege, period, because Virginia controls your license. If you are a driver with an out-of-state license, then Virginia has no control over that. They're going to restrict your privilege to drive in Virginia. And if it gets relayed back to your home state, what your home state does is something you're going to have to deal with too. For a lot of jurisdictions, nothing else will happen to you in your home state. And for other ones, sometimes the penalties can be the same or worse than what Virginia is going to do.
Do you remember there used to be a standard rule as to how much jail time you would get depending on the speed that you were going? Anna, do you remember that? It may have changed, but over 90, then over 100 miles per hour in Fairfax County specifically is usually what we're dealing with.
Well, when we started practicing much later in time than Garrett Green,
had a car when we started practicing, but go ahead.
Exactly. We're not using horse and buggy or anything like that. So, but it was a day in jail. It was a rule of thumb for every mile over 90. And generally if you're in the speeds of 100, we were looking to do the best we could downstairs, which is the general district court, and then appeal it upstairs and do a jury trial. Because the judge is pretty adamant that if it was going to go to trial in front of a judge and they convicted you, you were going to go to jail. But the rule of thumb was a day in jail for every mile over 90.
Hey, Garrett, what do you think about, and we'll get to that eventually, but there is a difference between a bench trial where the judge hears the evidence and decides whether or not you're innocent or guilty, and then determines the sentence, and then maybe we'll touch back on this later on, but then there's a jury trial as to whether or not jury is more likely to give you jail time as well.
So yeah, the prevailing wisdom is that driving too fast should result in active jail time. So while it's always a gamble to put a jury on, you never know who you're going to get. You never know the background of them, notwithstanding if you do a voir dire and try and find out what their inclinations are. Generally, in my experience, juries rarely give active jail time, even at triple-digit speeds.
But there's that rare case. I've heard of people going to jail on a 75 and a 55. I mean, you just
it, it could happen. You could have somebody on that jury who has a friend or a relative who was injured in a high-speed crash and killed, and they're looking to stick it to the next person. Absolutely. And they're delighted to be on the jury. So it's not a sure thing.
Hey, Tony, what are some of the things that the police officers or the trooper is required to show as far as in front of the judge? What are they required to prove? How do they prove what the speed is? Is it just visual or?
There's a few ways. They do a visual estimate, and usually the hardware that they use to actually testify about the final speed is to confirm the visual estimate. However, they have typically three different ways to measure speed. That's with a radar, which is the radio waves, a LIDAR, which is a laser beam, or by pace, which is using the speedometer in their vehicle to match the other driver's pace to come up with a speed that they allege that the other driver is driving.
Anna, do you think are one's more accurate than the other, or are they all supposed to be the same in the eyes of the law?
The different radar and LIDAR, you'll talk to the troopers and the police officers, and they all say that LIDAR is the most accurate, but that's not what they do for a living. They don't create these devices. And frankly, their accuracy is dealt with in the code. And in order for us to deal with the accuracy of those devices, there are a lot of kind of tricky defenses that we can go with. But generally, LIDAR is more accurate because it's able to pinpoint the specific car, and it's be able to do it by distance and measurements. So it's a laser.
So unlike a radar, which, Ann, do you know the difference between the radar and the LIDAR? I think it's the signal that comes out is different. So for instance, a radar has more of a wide range. So unlike the laser, which is a laser pinpoint accurate, it gets to one vehicle, I guess, as a defense attorney. And you would say, well, wait a second, if you have this radar that's spanning out like a fan, you'd have more of a defense. Would you say that, Anne?
Yeah, I would. You already answered that. So I think we're good to go there. Why don't we talk a little bit about what happened in Jason Wirth's case? Were any of you guys present that day when it was tried in general district court or familiar with any of the facts?
I happened to be there. I think Garrett actually had an even better opportunity to speak to the trooper or the officer who pulled him over.
Yeah, that's right. The trooper was out in the hallway because there's something called a rule on witnesses where they exclude people from being in court who are witnesses so they can't hear the testimony of other parties. And suffice to say, this trooper who I know pretty well, is a nice guy. He was pretty upset. He was, first of all, upset that the entire prosecutor's office was angling for the opportunity to get autographs from him while they were at the same time prosecuting him and seeking to put him in jail. So he didn't think that was very entertaining at all, to have them all doughy-eyed and wondering whether it'd be inappropriate or not to slip a piece of paper under his hand to get his signature. But the one thing we wanted to discuss was what to say and what not to say when you're getting pulled over. And Jason Worth apparently said some things that he probably shouldn't have said.
Do you know who I am?
That's the magic line. Do you know who I am? So this trooper, to give you the story, he's got a little bit of a Southern accent. So he's telling me how he sees this long hair. Tony, no offense intended. You can't see him, but Tony is a long hair too. I see this long hair in a real fancy car going way too fast. And so I light him up. And, you know, I don't know what I'm dealing with because, you know, fancy car and the long hair. So I don't draw down on him, but I pull my piece out and I yell at him, "What the heck you think you're doing?" And I asked the trooper what he answered. He said, "Well, pushing my luck, officer." And that kind of made me laugh. And the trooper told me that he said, "That's a good answer." I didn't mind that answer at all. But it went south when I walked up to him. I said, "What happened then?" He said, "Well, I get up to the window and he says to me, 'Do you know who I am?'" And I think he lived to regret those words, because as the trooper explained to me, he has the option to write the citation for going 80 plus and not specify the speed. But after that remark, he said, "No, I don't know who you are." And Jason said, "I play outfield for the Washington Nationals." And the trooper told me, he said, "Well, I don't watch no baseball. You stay right here." And that's when he decided to strike him for put the actual speed on there. Whereas it might have come out in court. You never know. But he could have had a citation for just 80 plus. It could have been swept under the rug. Instead, he got cited for triple digit speed.
So at the time, and back when this happened, prosecutors in Fairfax County were actually getting involved in these reckless driving cases. Why it's important that the difference between a summons that has 80 plus and a summons that says 105 miles per hour is the prosecutor's looking at that piece of paper before they have a chance to speak to the attorney, to speak to the police officer, and it sets the tone. If you see a triple digit number as far as the speed's concerned on the summons, you are already going up an uphill. You're going to have an uphill battle. And it's absolutely hilarious. So what are some of the things that you should probably say if you're in that situation? I have a feeling what you're going to say, but what do you think is the best route when you get pulled over by a police officer?
Nothing. Shut up. No, give them your name, be polite, give them the documents that they're asking for, but don't admit what you were doing. They're just going to use that against you. And don't provide apologies, say, "Oh, I was late to the meeting," you know, because then the officer says, "Yes, I pulled them for this and they admitted to speeding and said they knew what they were doing because of X, Y, and Z." Like, those things don't help you. Just be polite and be quiet. That's what I always tell everybody.
Yeah. And Anna, let me ask Anna this. Do you think there's ever a legitimate reason to tell an officer? Say if there's a legitimate emergency, do you think that would help?
It has, actually. Okay. I had a client who was driving fast on 495 and he was almost to 100 and the trooper pulled him over and he said, "Why are you driving that fast?" And he said, "I found out my son was shot in Baltimore and I am getting to the hospital because I don't know his condition." And the officer let him go.
Wow.
It can also help out in court, depending on what the officer remembers. You know, I had one hypothetical client who said that she was on her way to church, and the officer remembered that and told the prosecutor that, and the prosecutor, for some reason, thought that was a pretty good excuse.
Well, that actually means a lot. I had a close friend of mine, he was a family member. I'm not going to say who, because I'll probably end up losing a lot more, but he was stopped in a different location further south where going to church is something that they consider. And when he went to court on this reckless driving, the prosecutor wanted to know his background, whether or not he was a church going fella. And since he was, the funny thing is I was actually behind this individual when he got pulled over and drove by him. But we weren't going to church that day, but we didn't have to admit anything because we didn't say anything, or he didn't say anything. But things like that matter. And Garrett and I were actually speaking about this earlier. How important is that initial contact with the law enforcement officer after they pull you over? And what's the best route that you can take, or what's the best thing you do to at least not piss him off or her off?
So I was going to throw out there what people think about whether to ask for a warning, which I don't personally favor. I do like, as we were discussing earlier, if you give an excuse that's not bad right there when you're by the side of the road, the officer's going to make a note of it, and it's going to have more credibility because that's what you said to the cop right by the side of the road. It wasn't something you cooked up with the assistance of counsel. I recently had a gentleman who was clutching. He came to court unrepresented. He saw what was happening to people for reckless driving. He had this local newspaper. Turned out his parents said he learned that the townhouse in which his elderly parents lived in Gaithersburg had caught fire. And he was in a panic driving up there. And that's what he told the trooper. That was a good defense. The trooper, of course, was unimpressed and said, well, he's not a firefighter. He couldn't have done anything. But the judge saw it differently and saw how someone might be panicked by that. And that, with a good driving record and a drive improvement course, they're willing to overlook that that behavior. And it was a good thing for him to say why he was driving that fast in that instance. So sometimes it's not bad to give a reason. What do you guys think about saying what speed? Ever say what speed when they ask you how fast you're going? Should you say something?
No, you should never say what speed. But I'd like to go back to what was in our just now previous episode, which I'm sure you all listened to. But all the things we're talking about, people want to explain their behavior. But generally, that means you're admitting that you did something wrong. I did something wrong, but my son was shot. I did something wrong, but my grandparents' house burned down and I was distracted. You are at that point, hopefully you have a good attorney and hopefully you have a sympathetic judge, but you're now in a position where you're just trying to explain mitigation, where you're admitting that I was doing this thing, but I had this reason. And the officer's right. He's not a firefighter. What's he going to do then? My client wasn't a doctor. What's he going to do at the hospital? But those are certainly more sympathetic excuses or reasons, but those can be proffered when you get to court by your lawyer as mitigation if you are actually convicted of something. And I think it is always dangerous to supply excuses, but reality is people make them.
And honestly, I mean, if you're presenting that to a judge, the majority of these judges have heard every excuse under the
don't tell the judge know what speed you were going, because I've heard so many judges tell people, were you looking at your speedometer at the time you were pulled over? And the reality is, even if you were, no judge is going to believe that. And the reality is you weren't. And so,
but you have to be, to be careful too. Cause if you say, I have no idea how fast you were going, then whatever the trooper says is now, gold. And like, Anthony, maybe you could explain to us and I'm sorry, I know you're about to say something. If you want to say that first, you can. But when do you actually have the opportunity to take a case like that up to jury, which maybe a jury of seven of our peers would be more sympathetic to an excuse that maybe they haven't heard every day of their lives 100 times a day while they're sitting through a traffic docket?
So to answer your question, obviously, if you're convicted of the reckless driving, it's a class one misdemeanor. You can certainly take that up on appeal to a circuit court for a jury trial, and you have the right to testify if you want to and explain to the jury what was going on. Or, and Garrett might be able to tell us a little bit more about this, try to challenge the scientific method by which the officer measured the speed and see if the jury believes it actually works. But the other thing I was going to say is ask everybody if you've ever had a client who's been argumentative with the officer on the side of the road and how that's worked out, because I know in my situations, it never seems to work out very well.
Don't plead your case by the side of the road, I think is the best advice. I think we all would agree on that. nothing is gained with a extended dialogue with the officer. You're more likely to upset him and say things that are either incriminating or that are going to be used as ammunition against you. So there's another couple lawyers who refer to it as shut the F up. You know, shut the F up Friday. This could be shut the F up Friday.
We call it shut the front door.
Shut the front. Okay. Yeah,
Alberto is very sensitive to cursing. I don't know if you know that about him. He's very.
Do you think crying gets you out of tickets?
I've cried many times. I cry every night when I get to my driveway, but that gets me nowhere. So I have a very stressful job. I am so happy to get home.
Well, we know we talked about the penalties and talked about the penalties for conviction, but those penalties aren't always, you know, we've all done lots of reckless driving tickets. Is jail always immediately on the table?
No,
Garrett,
absolutely not.
No,
it depends.
Less and less so during the pandemic, right? I mean, I've noticed that there's been a relaxation of the standards for jail time in local jurisdictions. Which I think is a good thing. It's less dogmatically, you got to go to jail if you're going this fast.
I thought about getting to jail because they were giving away the vaccines or I thought, you know, maybe one day in jail and hiring one of us to represent me, not guaranteed a clean record, but I'd have a good chance. You know, it'd be a good chance. And maybe I'd walk out with a vaccine, which is
I would, of course, encourage you to take the deal, though.
All right, guys. Well, so we've been chatting for quite a while. Like, why don't we kind of wrap this up and let everybody give their final tips on whatever they want the world to know about reckless driving and speeding and going to jail in Virginia?
Well, should we give Garrett the honor since he's our guest today, or should we have him go last?
Would you like to go first or last?
I'll jump in right now because it occurred to me that one thing that we didn't discuss, there are lots of people, particularly in the Metro DC area, who just can't suffer a criminal conviction or don't want one under any circumstances, never mind whether there's jail or loss of license. They're desperate to avoid, either for immigration reasons or security clearance reasons, or they just plain don't want to have a permanent criminal conviction. And there's a game you can play where you actually agree to have your bond revoked and sit in a jail cell for a little bit of time. And then when you pop out, you no longer have a criminal conviction. And it sounds crazy, but there's a lot of people who find that as an attractive option. And there are a lot of prosecutors, I call them red meat prosecutors. They love putting people in jail. They don't care if they get a criminal conviction or not. There are certain judges that will briefly step someone back, meaning have them sit in a holding cell till the end of the docket and then let them go without the criminal conviction. So talk to your lawyer about what's important to you. And we all assume that the most important thing is avoiding active jail time and loss of license. It may be avoiding a criminal conviction is more important to you. Talk to your lawyer about that. See what can be done.
Because, I'll go second, because reckless driving is a class one misdemeanor, which is the same level as a DWI, same level as an assault and battery, same level as a driving and suspended. And those things matter. If you have a clearance, you may be able to, your clearance may be in jeopardy. So, and every, what Garrett was saying, every jurisdiction is different. As a matter of fact, in Fairfax these days, there's no prosecutor. So there's no option for you to go up to the judge and say, hey, revoke his bond. I don't see that ever happening. And Prince William, other jurisdictions like that used to be something that happened much more often. There's a change there. It really matters on which jurisdiction you're in. And talk to your attorney. If an attorney's practice in a particular jurisdiction, they'll know what the likelihood or it may not be possible in every place is what I want to tell you.
I just want to say, remember that your driver's license is a privilege, not a right, and it can be taken away. And we didn't touch on juveniles, but there's a whole separate system for juvenile cases. And the juvenile court has a whole lot more things they can do. And they take it a lot more seriously because you're so young and you're learning. And you can have your license taken from DMV when you get convicted outside of the courts. And so if you're a juvenile, you got to remember that you may have additional penalties that adults may not be facing, but at the end of the day, any of us could lose our right to drive if we abuse that privilege.
And I would point out that if you are charged with a reckless driving, don't panic. You should probably talk to a lawyer, but there's a lot of alternative outcomes depending on the circumstances of the stop and also mitigation that you can do after the stop. So even though you're charged with the reckless driving, it doesn't necessarily mean that you'll ultimately be convicted of the reckless driving. So you should talk to a lawyer, and there are options that could result in a better outcome for you.
And I would agree with what everybody else has said at this point, but I would also say that, you know, I just mentioned earlier that jail is not as often on the table most of the time. And I would say 90 and under, certainly jail is not often as much on the table. And then, you know, depending on the situation, I mean, Alberto mentioned Fairfax doesn't have prosecutors involved, but there are times when you can resolve those cases as speeding cases or other cases with the amount of mitigation. There are defenses, there are technical defenses about the speeding, about radar and LIDAR. And those are things that when you are hiring a traffic lawyer, you're looking for someone who has a lot of experience with those different outcomes. Your license is really important, and your freedom is really important. And slow down. It's not worth getting one of these reckless driving. And it's great to meet one of us, but it's not great to put your liberty or your license in peril.
Well, I want to make sure that we thank Garrett, and just, I know I've been ribbing Garrett a lot, but he's actually 5 years my senior. He's really not much older than I am. It's rare to find an older person doing this traffic and criminal stuff every day. So I like to pick on him.
Wait, you're 70?
Yeah, Sonny, I'm 75. So thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you, Garrett.
Thank you, Garrett.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Garrett.
Keep on.
Thanks for joining us on Crime Time with Virginia Defense Attorneys. We hope you listen to our next episode.